Yakko, first bill to take up Senate Bill 435, Senator Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you don't have a lot of time, so I appreciate it very much getting a chance to come and talk about Senate Bill 435. It's fairly self-explanatory. It would set up a class size reduction pilot program. Wouldn't actually begin in FY93. The Department of Education had originally supported it and then later recommended that we wait until FY94 to actually begin the program so they could have the first year to design the scientific approach that they intend to use on this. The general idea is that most people probably already agree that lower class sizes makes for a better educational setting. This would be a controlled effort to tell us how much difference that really makes. And I think that I already believe that it makes a lot of difference and that we ought to be putting more attention toward reducing class size. But I think if we do this, we can, have another, more ammunition to prove our point. Most people understand that we'd have probably better test scores. We've also seen from other efforts that you're likely to have a major decrease in discipline problems, increases in parent participation. The first question I usually get asked is, well, I already know that this will help, so why do this? But I just don't think enough people are convinced, at least not enough, to put a lot more money into these programs. So that's the general pitch. Be happy to respond to questions.
What do you do if it works, Sam? I mean, if this works, it means more money for classrooms, probably, or shifting the way we deal with classroom utilization. I mean, have you thought to the next step, too? Because intuitively, I think it works, too, but what I also know is that it does cost more or cause other shifts to occur in the school system.
Well, I think that we're going to have to face it, that we, in spite of the way things are going in Alaska, the classrooms are becoming more and more crowded, and we're putting off doing something about it. I think this will help force us into recognizing the problems we're having now, and I think recognizing that this is one of the answers to it, and it's, you know, I'm not sure how you get there from here, but you are going to have more dollars to build more classrooms and hire more teachers if we've got the kids that need it. So I think this arms us with better information. We may find out that it helps, but maybe it isn't that significant. I believe it is, and I think that'll help accomplish our goals. Just for your information, Commissioner Covey, the Department of Education, does support this, as does NEA, the Association of School Boards, and the Association of School Administrators.
Senator McClain. Senator Cotton, on page 2, section 2, lines 4 and 5, how is that going to impact the foundation formula if we're providing more monies for the pilot projects?
Right. The foundation formula would be revised for a 3-year period, mm-hmm. and it would allow these schools up to 5. So the fiscal note reflects the situation if the commissioner did choose 5 schools to participate, and at approximately $200,000 each, they would raise the requirements for the foundation formula. The way it works is they become separate funding communities and are funded as such under 14-17-041-B1. That's the large school single site, or the large school separate funding community. An interesting note, we originally had it drafted wrong, and if we had used a small site separate funding community, the fiscal note would have been about $3 million. Here it's about $970,000.
Okay, thank you.
And that's the other question that comes up most often is what happens to the foundation formula. Well, the cost of fully funding the foundation formula would go up $972,000, assuming the commission selected 5 schools. Mm-hmm. So if the legislature fully funds whatever the unit value is, then no schools lose any money, but the state would have to pay, obviously, $972,000 more general fund dollars to fully fund the program for a 3-year period.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cotton, I guess just one more technical question. I notice the ratio you have in elementary schools is 25 to 1, and I also note that it excludes like library or physical education classes and so forth. But I guess in determining that ratio, are we only counting classroom teachers, or are we counting counselors or other aides that might be available there? Maybe that's a better question to ask Dwayne.
No, I can respond to that. If you take a look at, as you mentioned, on page 2, line 25, we talk about students to the class ratio of students to teacher in the elementary school is greater than 25-1. And look at the definition of teacher. That's a person who is an actual classroom instructor in a regular instructional program. So it does not include support staff. So it requires that you actually have 25 or a greater number of students per actual classroom teacher.
The reason I ask, Mr. Chairman, under the school profiles that was recently put out, the school district that has the highest pupil-teacher ratio, and of course that includes secondary as well as elementary, is Anchorage. And Anchorage ratio is 19.4-1. So if it used the same standards, probably no school would qualify for this experiment program, but if it's only the classroom teacher, I'm sure there's a lot of classes that have 25 or more students in.
As a former professional in education, you very, very clearly identified the difference between students per teacher and students per, I'm not sure what the other description is, but there are obviously a couple of different ratios you can come up with.
Representative Mars.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, my senator.
That scares me when she says it.
Quit picking on my student.
I think he may be your student, but he is my senator. I am aware that other studies, such as is being recommended, has already taken place in other states, one being the state that I was born in. And having said that, I wonder why we feel it necessary to implement a pilot program when all of the data already exists, I believe, it clearly establishes that the elementary education is much enhanced with a lower pupil-teacher ratio. You might not be aware, but at one time in the state when we had the old state-operated school system, they did have negotiated with their teachers' union at the time, negotiated of 21 students for K through 6, I believe, and I think it was about 17 from kindergarten through the third grade. It proved to be very worthwhile at the time in the state. So I know that you have a very rational reason, I'm sure, for choosing to have a pilot study, but I just wondered if we didn't already have enough data that we didn't really need a pilot study.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, the first bill I put in established a statewide standard of 15-1 for the early class, for the early grades, and 20-1 for 4-6, and 25-1 for high school. And most of us got pretty scared off by the fiscal notes involved with that. I'm already convinced. That's one part of it. The other part is Tennessee, Nevada, Indiana, other states have done studies for their own parts of the country. And I think Alaska is quite a bit different than Tennessee. I think you'd probably agree with that. But
we both got mountains and both got me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I started out saying that some people are already convinced. I think that we need to make a better showing of the importance of this here in Alaska before we're going to do anything about it. And that's, like I say, I started out with a different approach and realized pretty quickly that we probably weren't going to get there from here. I'd like to go further than this, but I believe this is a good start. And
well, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I know that one of the problems that we have had in this vein is because we had a court case that came out of Kenai that establishes that class size was not a negotiable item. So it's never been available as a negotiable item since that time when they're negotiating contracts. And I thought perhaps that maybe giving the Teachers Association that option to negotiate that in lieu of other things that they might wish to have might be a better approach. Comments, please.
Well, that is a different. You're talking about whether or not we ought to give teachers the right to negotiate on this issue.
Yes.
As a different approach. I think that's worthy of consideration. I'm not sure that we get to the same point, but I think it's a fair idea. I just chose to take the other course here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Deer.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Samos.
When you have the class size here, does that mean
Class size of one grader could possibly mean a class of multiple grades. And I guess my next question would be, so, as opposed to setting up a separate pilot project center, could you just monitor some rural school that has that's like a one-room classroom of 25 or less or something? Just collect information on that and compare it to an urban school with 40 kids in there or something like that.
Well, you could do that. And these questions have come up before, and I think the Department of Education allowed that they'd treat that. They'd take all the elementary schools in that particular setting and consider them the same way you consider the average class ratio of students to teachers anyplace else in an elementary school. So, in fact, some of the some rural schools may actually qualify. Unalaska is probably one of them, I'm told. They would probably reach this 25-to-1 ratio. But once you start going into the rural schools where you've got, in some cases, I believe, at least I'm told, that K through 12 in the same building, or maybe even in the same classroom. That's obviously a totally different set of circumstances, and that's a problem that rural Alaska deals with in other ways. In fact, most of those situations, they're already separate funding communities and already enjoy, you know, more dollars than another school in a different situation would enjoy. But I've never pretended that this was a proposal that would affect everybody in Alaska or benefit everybody in Alaska. Rural Alaska obviously has some problems with education that are different. This is primarily, an approach for urban, just because that's where most of the crowded classrooms are. But again, I'm told that now that at least one rural community, if you want to call Unalaska rural, would probably qualify.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, my question, Sam, was, couldn't you just take one of those, instead of setting up a whole new program, couldn't you just look at one of those small schools in rural Alaska, a place that's maybe 10 students or something like that, and just report on that school for, or collect data on that school for 4 years? I guess is what you're doing here, as opposed to setting up a whole new something else in urban Alaska.
Yeah, you could do that. I don't think it would be as productive a study as actually going into an urban setting or an area where you do have crowded classrooms and making a change and comparing a crowded classroom in a city to a not so crowded classroom in the same city or in the same area. I think you'd have a different set of results. Most of us aren't familiar with what it would even be like to be in a small village where they have a one-room schoolhouse. So, I think you've got a different set of problems than areas with crowded classrooms.
Further questions? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on Representative Jocko's question, I believe that there probably may be schools such as in Kotzebue where perhaps they would have a situation where a study could be done, because that's not a typical village. It's a larger population base, and they have a pretty good-sized school there. So perhaps a pilot program of a school such as that could also be looked at the same time that you're going into the urban areas to look at the overcrowding and how that has been affected by the PTR.
I don't know if you've gotten your packet the intent language from the House Hess Committee, and some of this discussion took place there, and it was suggested that the rural schools and the circumstances in rural schools ought to be considered as a factor in this study, and I think that's some fair direction. I don't know if there's anybody from the Department of Education here. I see Dwayne Guiley's here now. He may be able to respond better. I don't pretend to be a professional in the measuring of students or in even an educational professional, but the ones that I've talked to have convinced me that this is a very worthwhile approach, and that we'll actually be able to get some results that will be usable. And there may be a lot of ways to approach it that as people here have suggested, but I'm relying, again on the professionals at the Department of Education on some of this approach.
Here's the letter of intent.
Further questions for Senator Cotton? Senator Cotton, does the department wish to talk about it?
I think you're available if there's anybody wanted them to.
Are there further questions? Senator Boyle.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out the House CS for SB 435 test with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Without objection, the bill moves to committee with individual recommendations and the fiscal note. The only two bills that we're going to take up here now are HJR 19 and House Bill 575. So anyone here who's here for other bills, I just have to tell you that we have to go back to the floor, and we'll take up the other bills that are on the calendar when we finish. Why these people leave? Okay, we'll take up House Bill 575 first. We have a new draft that's dated 5792, and I will briefly go through what it does. It should be in your packet. And relating to the motor fuel tax, Section 1 and 2 deal with the municipal motor fuel tax. Section 3 makes the motor fuel tax 17 cents. And Section 4 replaces Section 3 in 1996 when the surcharge is repealed. Section 5 is also at 17 cents, and it's repealed and made 18 cents in Section 6 in 96. 7, 8, 9, and 10. 10 and 11 are really just technical amendments. 12 is the 1 cent surcharge on motor fuel, which are used for the storage tank assistance fund. It takes effect in this bill July 1 of 92. And the reason for that is that I'm trying to make it conform with the constitutional amendment to the dedicated fund. The surcharge needs to be in effect before the constitutional amendment takes effect, so that the language that's in the constitutional amendment relating to the effective date, this bill doesn't take effect if this doesn't pass. If the constitutional amendment doesn't pass, then the gas tax increase doesn't take effect. The surcharge, the 1 cent surcharge, would take effect.
Mr.
Senator Brown.
On that point, looking at page 6, section 14 of 575. Okay, it says sections 1 through 6 do not take effect if, and so forth. And the question occurs to me, what if the constitutional fund does not get the necessary votes, and would the tax take effect in that event?
The way that this is written in here is that if the constitutional amendment doesn't get enough votes, the gas tax would still take effect January 1 of 93. But by that I mean if it doesn't get enough votes in the legislature to be put on the ballot. If it's put on the ballot and it fails on the ballot in November, then the gas tax does not take effect. So that the language says if this is put on the ballot and it fails, a vote of the public, it fails to amend the Constitution, the gas tax would not go into effect. If the gas tax passes the legislature and the constitutional amendment does not pass the legislature, the gas tax would still go into effect. Is that clear?
Which portion of the gas
tax? All of the gas tax would go into effect.
If
the surcharge would go into effect July 1 of this year, the gas tax would go into effect January 1 of 93. And the reason for that is to try to get both bills through the legislature. Representative Barnes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way you have described it, it would seem to me that you set up the people. Because you're saying that this bill would go into effect if it passed the legislature, even if the constitutional amendment failed.
No. Mm-mm. Only if the constitutional amendment fails to pass the legislature and put on the ballot. If it's put on the ballot and it fails by a vote of the public to adopt the constitutional amendment, the gas tax also fails to take effect.
But then you're saying if the constitutional amendment doesn't pass, I want to make sure I understand this. When the constitutional, should it not pass the legislature, this bill then still goes into effect?
If it passes the legislature, and I think that...
But it would not be dedicated. It would just go into the general fund.
Right.
Okay, I got that straight.
What's that?
I said, I've got that straight.
Okay, that's how they're intertwined here. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to bring up another concern. When we talked the other day about a motor fuel surcharge or tax, at least kind of it was my impression that we were talking about motor fuel that would be used in some type of transportation, whether it be by road, water, or aviation. In going over the statutes, I noticed where it said motor fuel is also, and this is the definition, it's 4440-100L in the statute. It says, fuel used in stationary power plants of 100 kilowatts or less that generate electric power for commercial enterprises, not for resale, as one exclusion. But I guess where my concern is that we have a lot of enterprises around the state that generate their own electrical power that are larger than 100 kilowatts. And under the action that we're taking here, they would be included, and they would have to pay up to 10 cents a gallon more for their fuel, which means, I think, and probably a lot of the nonprofits and so forth around the rural areas of Alaska, that we are placing an added burden on them that we did not intend to. So I'm just wondering if we should add another provision that would just do away with that of 100 kilowatts or less and just have it read, fuel used in stationary power plants that generate electrical power for commercial enterprises, not for resale, be excluded from this tax. It's under Alaska Statutes 4440-100L.
Right, C and D.
Well, it's
together with non-profit power associations or corporations for generating electric energy for resale. Underground storage tanks, which may need to be cleaned up, which is what the purpose of the surcharge is for.
That's what one of the 10 cents is for. Maybe we should say 1 cent of that's a full 10. Mr. Chairman, we could even add a sentence that said something like this. You know, fuel used in stationary power plants of 100 kilowatt hours or more would be assessed the 1 cent surcharge.
Mm-hmm. That would be a lot cleaner.
I know, but it's
power
clever.
Power plants of 100 kilowatts or more would be assessed to 1 cent per gallon surcharge.
Let's see, they're already charged now for fuel tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
They would be charged.
How does that impact the existing tax rate versus what's been proposed?
Yeah,
do they pay taxes?
It would exempt
now?
Them from all the taxes, yes. But they're not exempted here. If there's more than 100 kilowatts,
so somehow we would have to make it just 1 cent to the new proposed.
If you wanted to take them out of the 10 cent increase
and make it just a 1 cent increase.
Yeah, then you'd have to change this for the increase. And once we start getting into the exceptions, I mean, the oil company's going to. I guess that's.
I just wonder if we couldn't have a kind of a conceptual amendment and have legal kind of amendment here. And then if they can't come up with something that's satisfactory, we just won't address it, I guess.
Okay, I see what you're trying to get at here. How big is their plant?
It would be about $370,000 additional motor fuel per year for them. Which is a pretty big hit.
How big is their generating plant?
I asked that question and they didn't know the size, but it was a lot larger than 100 kilowatts.
Send the prisoners to see where something is. I don't know, you know, I think a lot of it was taking the bomb and then I was able to see if you compare it to the
next
day.
Okay. Where's Larson? Meeting will come back to order. Representative Larson, we could add.
Which bill are we on?
We're on 575. We could add a new section that amended L to delete the of 100 kilowatts or less.
Yeah.
so that it would be fuel use in stationary power plants that generate electric power for commercial enterprise, not for resale.
I would so move if that's agreeable with you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is there objection? Without objection, that amendment's adopted. Are there further questions on 575? Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman, as we talked about before, I'm interested in having at least the highway portion of this money also be available for use for pedestrian improvements and transit improvements. And
Representative Brown, we're on the gas tax bill, not the dedicated fund.
Well, on page 4 of in section 9, it looks like we're specifying for what purposes the money can be spent. And as it's now drafted, it looks fairly narrow. And I'm wondering whether the, as you know, the new Federal Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act does allow expenditures on these types of projects, and I feel that they should be included. And I wonder, are they included by reference somehow now, or could we include them here in this section 9?
We have someone from the department to answer whether or not.
This is entirely for maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, it says construction of highway projects and ferries on line 26 of page 4. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I just propose this as a conceptual amendment on page 4 in the list of items that we're including here. I'd like to see us include after highways on line 26, after that highways, comma, pedestrian air quality and transit improvements, comma.
So, sorry, would you hit me with that again?
On page 4, line 26, after the highways, comma, maintenance of highways, comma, pedestrian air quality and transit improvements, comma, pickup, construction of highway projects and ferries.
What's this air quality stuff?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Barr?
Well, on that same section Representative Brown is discussing, this fuel tax is only levied on automobiles or highway transportation. Seeing as how it's only levied on highway transportation, can you tell me why, in the name of God, ferries are in here?
Yeah, I can tell you it's existing law, and if you didn't like it, you should have brought an amendment to change it.
Well, I so move, Mr. Chairman, because it's not fair. Take the money that, since we're not taxing any of the motor craft, to take money from construction of the highway projects and work on ferries. And I support projects for the ferries. And I believe we set up a fund for that. I even believe we funded some of it out of the 470 fund. But I don't believe that the money that's taken from people that drive the highways should then go for ferries.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Palmer.
Well, there's one problem here. We aren't seeing the entire statute. We're just looking at one little section here, you know, and this is existing law, and I'm not sure what all of this relates to. The deletion of it may impact other things in this section and where the money's coming from and where the money's going to. So I'd really appreciate it if someone from the Department of Transportation could kind of clarify 4340.010 and all of its subsections for us.
Mr. Ayer?
Well, this one is addressing programs provided for in AS 1910-150.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, it is existing law, and that is old law that has to do with relationship to the ferries. The statute, of course, will be guided by the constitutional amendment, and I realize that is not on the floor or on the table at this time. However, it's very specific in the constitutional amendment that the money, the tax, if you will, could only be used as it relates to the mode of transportation from which it was collected. And so your concern will be fixed on page 2, line 1 of the constitutional amendment, Representative Barnes. And I think that's exactly what your concern was, and it had been raised before, and that's why it's that way. And then that will clarify that issue. And you won't have to go in and start dissecting your existing statutes, because you have the constitutional amendment, which is very clear and will guide you in that particular regard. So it would not be able to be spent on ferries. It is very clear in that constitutional amendment.
Well, I don't think so, but I'm going to go have it checked out.
Okay. That's our understanding from your attorneys,
Representative Barnes. Because this language is statutory language, all of it says the legislature may. We can spend it on anything. Unless you do it in the Constitution, we don't prohibit ourselves by changing this language.
Mr. Chairman, I've been around here long enough to understand that. And I just want to make kind of clear that in my own mind, from legislative legal, that the language in this constitutional amendment does what it says it does, because Mr. Ayers argues with me that this bill doesn't do what you set up there and said it did.
Mr. Chairman, I have learned a long time ago not to argue with Representative Bond.
But you did.
Mr. Chairman, I spend several hundred dollars a year on motor fuel tax for my tractor, which never get on the public road. And I mean, this sort of illustrates the problem with these dedicated funds, because if we have a special dedicated fund for every particular use, including model airplanes, I think that, you know, it gets reduced to the point of absurdity. I think there has to be some flexibility, especially since we end up drawing from the general fund anyway to supplement all of these taxes. So I don't mind my tractor fuel tax, which I figured for IRS purposes one time run about $35 to $50 a year, depending on the year, and to which point I gave it up because that's not worth it as a deduction. So that's going to go for the repair of highways, big deal. But if we're going to specify everything, then we're going to end up specifying everything, like the snow machine tax and all the rest of it. And I don't know if we're going to
Chairman,
an accurate account of that anyway.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kopanen.
That's not a constitutional amendment yet. So, Representative Brown, your amendment is pending. Do you want to have your amendment in this bill, or do you want to hold it until we get to the constitutional amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that it's necessary to put it in the constitutional amendment if it's in here in particular, because we're talking about the mode, or as I read it on page 2, you're talking about the mode of transportation from which the revenue was collected. If it relates to that, if it relates to highways and pedestrian access and transit, I think are related to that. I think it would be more appropriate to have it here than to have it in the constitutional amendment, actually, but I'd ask Mr. Ayers for his thought on that. Doesn't seem to me that that's covered here now.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, it is our view that the construct of the constitutional amendment allows you the flexibility as long as it relates to the mode of transportation from which it was collected. Those which you described would be included as being related to the mode of transportation, which was, let's say, automobiles, certainly would be considered. I think that the enabling legislation that you would want to consider will come after the constitutional amendment is passed, and you may not want to try, as Representative Ulmer suggests, you may not want to try and start rewriting a multitude of statutes at this point, because the constitutional amendment will be your guiding light, and it is designed to be flexible so you can address your concerns. I don't think that you need to do that in this particular statute, based on my understanding.
Well, but since we're going to start levying a tax and putting it into a segregated fund, and I still believe it would be a good idea to put it here while this is in front of us and we're amending this. I don't see that it does harm to what's being suggested.
So what was your amendment? Pedestrian?
Air quality and transit improvements.
And where would it go?
It would go on line 26 after highways, comma.
Mr. Chairman, I sort of understand the transit thing. Pedestrian, I'm missing the point why we should put that in there.
I mean, the buses obviously use some form of fossil fuel, so they have to pay the tax somehow, right? So I can see the connection there, but pedestrian, he's just doing this, right? No fossil fuels involved.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the new federal expanded law allows dollars to be spent for not only building more roads, but developing modes of transportation that mean we don't have to have as many roads, and certainly pedestrian improvements relate to that. Trails, ways for people to walk so that they are not in the streets, and as you know, Anchorage doesn't have much pedestrian access. It's impossible, practically, because of the snow and so forth. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of problems with pedestrian.
Those funds used by the users ought to be dedicated for that particular use.
And the users walking, would benefit if there's the roads are less crowded.
But pedestrians are not paying anything other than, you know, the bus fares or a cab. You understand what I'm saying? You're paying for something that you're going to receive. I have a hard time. I understand what you're correct. I think we ought to have more, like the sidewalks should be cleared in the wintertime. I agree with you on that. But, you know, they're not paying anything,
Mr. Chairman,
other than property taxes.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Jacko?
If you're going to use the money also for pedestrian trails, how do you determine where those trails, where you could spend the money on them? Can you spend some money on some of the more remote parts of the state where they have only trails too? And also the air quality improvements, what are you talking about when you say air quality improvements? Is that something that relates directly to the vehicle, or what is it you're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, the automobile is one of the largest sources of air pollution, and the new federal laws are requiring more and more stringent controls on air quality, on limits on automobile emissions.
So how do you use this money for the need? Are you using the cars or something?
Could be used, for example, to study haze and pollution from cars.
How about the first question?
And it would be subject to appropriation by the legislature.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, let me just say that what you are establishing here is a opportunity to ensure that there are funds to maintain and operate the roads. You are not gathering up a vast sum of money to establish a construction program. Your construction program is over in the federal budget that is unrelated to either items that are before you today. Your construction concerns will ultimately have to be addressed in the ICE-T that you have discussed, which is the construction program underneath the federal program, which is not related to either of these items. This is simply to address the operation and maintenance of the basic transportation systems of the state.
But the problem, Mr. Chairman, the problem, I understand what Kay is saying, is that if you're an urban guy, you got sidewalks. And 9/10 of the time in the wintertime, it's not cleared.
The state of Alaska, as far as I know, is not shoveling sidewalks. This does provide This does provide for 2 cents opportunity for the local communities in that particular regard, right?
What's that? I'm sorry, Jim.
There is an opportunity, 2 cent opportunity, for the communities to provide for exactly that kind of a situation.
And they do.
Under this bill, you will allow the municipalities 2 cents of the 18 cents will be available to the local municipality to address those concerns.
But are you saying essentially you, DOT, will not be able to build a pedestrian crosswalk over a road because that happens to be pedestrian?
I'm sure they do it
in other words, since it's going to be related specifically to the mode of transportation, you can build a highway, but if it requires a pedestrian crosswalk, because that's pedestrian, you can't build that. You have to find the money for someplace.
The major construction projects that happen today don't come out of operations. They are established in the capital budget.
I thought if we were using it for construction.
It says right there in line 26.
I know, it says construction. Therefore,
it says construction.
The constitutional amendment will be the guiding light, and you will then, as the legislature, be able to establish, you will have enabling legislation, and anything that is related to the maintenance and operation of a public facility that relates to that mode of transportation. I don't think you will have a problem, but I think you can.
I have a problem with the mode of transportation. I have no problem with transportation, but that's another question when we get to that. Or that's the expansion of this argument.
Their objection to Representative Brown's line. Without objection, the language is adopted. Representative Barnes.
Mrs. Bannister is still researching it.
She'll be calling back shortly.
So we're going to Constitution.
We'll put 575 aside for a moment and take up the non-controversial bill. Sierra 19.
Mr. Chairman, before you get started on this, I have a couple of amendments I'd like to propose so we can discuss them in the context of it.
To HGR 19?
That's correct.
Okay.
You'll turn over to the back page, page 2, down on line 15. It says environmental problems created by petroleum storage tanks.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that should say underground petroleum storage tanks. And I would so move, and after the word or, for tank system, insert underground tank system. Federal law that we're addressing here relates directly to underground storage tanks.
It would read how?
It would read in context, environmental problems created by underground petroleum storage tanks are underground tank systems.
Representative,
I think we have problems with, on-ground tanks too, and then are left with the problem of bioremediation and the like, they leak as well as the ones that are buried, and many of the active turbines, a lot of them are surface tanks, not air-suspended ones, but the large tanks. In fact, that's what is stopping the Illinois straight improvement for DOT.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that this is the first time a piece of legislation has come before us where it did not say underground storage tanks. And in each and every instance that we have discussed underground storage tanks, we have discussed it in the context of the federal law, and we did not discuss above ground storage tanks. And I move both of those amendments.
There's objection. Janice Adair with the department or appropriate person to give a comment? I know, she's DNC. It's underground. This is lost.
Well,
are there questions of Representative
Brown? I'm not sure who of, but B says the section that the amendment is related to in B4, it begins, the section does not apply to revenue from the motor fuel surcharge that's specifically for the underground tanks. So,
excuse me, where are you reading?
I'm reading from page 2, beginning at line 7. You're trying to amend B4, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand, what does B mean, this section? What section are they speaking about? Section A does not apply to these tanks. Our revenue received from the surcharge that's collected for the underground storage tank program is not, I read this to say that if we do the surcharge for the underground storage tank problem, it's not related to this other transportation fund. Is that correct?
I think it should read Section A does not apply to the following.
Okay, but am I understanding it right? We're saying the revenue that we collected for the purpose of the UST program would not be going into this dedicated fund. It would not be in there. So we don't have a surcharge for above ground or anything else. So I'm not sure that the effect of the amendment is.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, I think the effect of that section is to clarify that the 1 cent surcharge to put in underground storage tank remediation, that money does not go into Section A, the purposes of which is transportation maintenance. That's all I think that means.
I don't think the amendment hurts or helps.
I agree.
Mr. Chairman, I disagree. I think you have to read the whole thing in the context. And you're talking about, under this dedicated fund, two separate things. And it talks about Constitution being amended, the Transportation Fund, and the Transportation Fund goes through, except as provided in D of this section, the legislature may make appropriations from the fund only for the maintenance and operation of state or local government facilities that relates to mode of transportation from which the revenue was collected in regards to revenue obtained from watercraft, also for the improvements and construction of harbor facilities, are. And then it goes on, B. And I believe it relates to the 1 cent, you may not, surcharge for underground storage tanks.
Mm-hmm. But that's not in the fund.
Can we have the drafter of the bill? Is the drafter of the bill here?
No, she's not. I just called her a minute ago.
Okay. Sure.
Ramona, if you look at line 7 on page 2, just read that as saying section A does not apply to, and see if that makes sense.
Section A?
Section A does not apply to...
To B.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Under B. Well, that's the way I was reading it, I thought. This, because you can't, there's no other place that I can see where you dedicate this money to the underground storage tank except here.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think the concept and... I haven't worked on this language, but I think the concept is that in the bill, in 575, we're putting on a 1 cent surcharge for underground storage tanks to be effective as of July 1st. And in the constitutional amendment, we're saying the dedication in Section A does not include the surcharge on underground storage tanks, which has been created by House Bill 575. And I think that's what we want to do. It's separate and apart, different from outsider, not being dedicated by the constitutional amendment.
I still would feel more comfortable with the words underground petroleum storage tanks or underground tank system and leaving it to just petroleum storage tanks or tank systems.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been brought to my attention, I think I'm beginning to get the picture here, but on page 5 of the bill, not the resolution, but the bill we were working on, 575, at page 5, beginning at line 22, there's the language about what the surcharge on motor fuel covers, and it covers all motor fuel subject to tax. That includes not just gasoline, but aviation fuel, and there's one other one in that category. So those, the all modes of transportation would be paying this surcharge here. And so the problems created by those, the storage of those other kinds of fuel could be addressed by the money that is segregated out and that would go into this mitigation account. No, I'm sorry. Goes into the general fund. And we may appropriate for it out of that.
Right. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyd.
And 4603410 defines tank system as meaning an underground petroleum storage tank system. So if it's all reflexive and it appears to be the way that Representative Brown just suggested, that's what I was looking at. Tank systems and this particular assessment is all related to the definition sections, and I think you're covered, or your interests are covered there.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sharp.
I believe that Representative Barnes probably is correct in the assumption that the only place that you can be sure that the law isn't changed to broaden it from the existing AS 4603410 storage tank is to put it in a constitutional amendment and make sure that it's labeled underground petroleum storage tanks. Otherwise, all it would take after this was passed would be 21 and 11 votes to change to any other kind of storage tank you want to in state law. So, you know, I guess that's one advantage of putting them both.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, but Madam Chairman, this is the exception, not the inclusion language.
Yeah, but I believe it'd carry a lot of weight if that's what was approved by the voters, that it was acknowledged that the surcharge was for underground storage tanks.
Yeah, but see, line 15 doesn't appropriate it to the storage tanks. It says that it is not included in Section A.
Okay,
well, let's suppose at some point the legislature creates some other tax scheme to fund some other kind of tank storage system. If you specifically would say underground on line 15, then that money that would be generated would go into Section A. This is an exception section. It's not an appropriation.
Not unless you extend the sunset.
Excuse me. Mr. Chairman? I think we need Terry Bannister to come over here, but if you read this, you know, I believe I'm correct. It says this section does not apply, and you drop down to 4, to revenues received from the motor fuel surcharge that is in effect on the effective date of this section.
Right.
The effective date of this section is when it's passed, but the motor fuel surcharge will already have been in effect, the way it is written in here, and whose purpose is specifically stated in law to be remedying environmental problems created by underground or created by petroleum storage tanks or underground tank systems. And I maintain that I want underground in there in both places.
Mr. Ayers.
Knowing, Madam Chairman, that this is the itch of ill-advised activity for me to sit at the table at this point in this discussion, and let me say that it's my understanding I am not the number wizard on the amount of revenue that is generated. But what you are doing in your section, or the surcharge section, section 12, you are establishing a 1 cent surcharge on all fuels consumed in the state. And that is going to generate a sufficient amount of money to do not only what I understand to be the underground storage tank program, but it is also going to generate sufficient funds to begin to address some of the other environmental problems that we have with leaking tanks in this state. Above ground. And those are serious environmental problems. I don't know. I agree with you about the language. I agree, but if you limit that surcharge to only underground storage tanks, I don't know what the you're going to generate more than sufficient money to cover your underground storage tanks, and whether you want to begin to address those other issues or allow yourself the opportunity to do that, because it will still have to be appropriated by you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Copeland and then Barnes.
One of the major problems we have with above ground tanks is not the tanks themselves, but the piping that goes underground that breaks or is moved by frost or other things and the leakage that occurs from that. How does that fit in? They are underground. The leakage is underground. The tank happens to be on top of the ground, but the source of leakage is underground.
Madam Chair?
I think we're quibbling over the damnedest thing.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Copeland, I don't think any of us know which one of those issues and whether when you get into the definition where the problem is. And I don't. And you're talking about a constitutional amendment now. And I think you want to allow yourself the flexibility each year to make the decision about where you're going to apply the money in case of an emergency. And you don't want to necessarily hamstring yourself.
You may not, but I do. Because every time we've ever talked about leaky underground storage tanks, and God knows we've talked about them enough, it's been underground storage tanks that we had to take care of because of federal law. Because the Environmental Protection Agency says either we do this or this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And now people have gone out and made a deal with the oil companies that they won't yell about the 470 fund being used for a year to take care of these underground leaky storage tanks because the surcharge has been put on, and I think there's been a scam running here. I'm sorry, I don't like that kind of business. I want this to be specific to what we've talked about all the time. And nobody ever came in here and said, not once ever, that we were going to address anything other than underground storage tanks.
Representative Brown. Well, Madam Chair, I would just have to disagree a little bit with the last speaker. When this bill was originally introduced, it covered the original law that set up the underground storage tank, originally covered both. In the process, the above ground were dropped because it was recognized that this is an expensive problem. And during our discussion, at least one member of the committee, the co-chair, has brought up on several occasions her desire to see above ground covered as well. And above ground there are tanks above ground that are leaking that are almost more of a problem than the ones under the ground. Both the above ground and the underground have all types of fuel in them. And as I read it, Representative Barnes, we would have to, in the future, if in the future we decided to have a program like the underground, we would have to have a statute that did that, and we would have to amend the purposes for which the surcharge of 1 cent could be spent. And I don't see that this constitutional amendment, if you'd listen to me for a moment.
I'm listening. I'm just making sure I get to respond.
So I guess I'm saying I don't see that your amendment does what you're trying to achieve, and maybe I'm not sure that it makes a difference, because at the time that this would go into effect on the effective date of the section, we would only have the underground one there anyway, and the only effect of it is to keep it out of the general fund. And in the future, the legislature, if it decided it wanted to regulate the above ground, could change the law and authorize that. And Mr. Ayers is nodding yes. I think that's the effect of what we're doing. It is not a scam, and it is an appropriate way to take care of this environmental problem.
Madam Chair, my response is it may not be a scam to her, it's a scam to me. It's the first time I've ever heard us discuss that we were taking care of something other than the underground storage tanks, because of federal law. And when we go out and negotiate deals with people to give 470 funds or whatever until we get this on the ballot and get it approved, I think that we need to stick with the intent of that which we were promulgating to begin with. Further, I do believe, in my mind at least, that the people have heard so much about underground leaky storage tanks that they might vote for that as long as it said leaky underground storage tanks. But if you leave it this way, I personally am going to go out and campaign against it, tell people it doesn't say leaky underground storage tanks. And, you know, Madam Co-Chair may want it in there for all the reasons stated. There's people that own houses in Anchorage that may want it in there for all of their reasons. But I don't believe the state of Alaska should get in the business of paying for every leaky underground storage tank there is, or ever above ground leaky storage tank. People have some responsibility for their actions. And if they let their tanks leak, then just like I feel the service stations ought to have to clean up after themselves, they made a profit for doing that. That's why I have never supported the 470 fund, because I believe that that is part of their profit to pay for the damage they do to the environment.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you. It was my impression, Mr. Ayers had said that he thought there was going to be more than enough money generated by the 1 cent tax to take care of the underground tanks. I thought I've got copies of what's already been filed with the EC on request for help, not only on remedial and replacement, but on tank testing. And my recollection is that it is well into the $20-30 million range on the book I've got that's that thick from DEC. And my calculations is from the time we, in July of this year until July of 96, it's only going to create at the maximum $20 to $25 million. So I don't know where the surplus is going to come from for other tanks.
Representative Boyer.
Madam Chairman, I would just speak, I suppose, in support of the amendment, because I don't think it does any harm. By definition, tank system means underground petroleum storage tank, and underground petroleum storage tank means underground tanks containing petroleum. I mean, it is the definition. So, and I think I agree with Representative Brown that if we, in the future, decide to move into the above-ground tank system, we'd have to amend 410 anyway to get there, to create that program. And the constitutional language here, even with that change, even with the amendment, does not keep us from appropriating funds for that purpose. So I don't think it does any harm. And we ought to move on. Question, Mr. Chairman.
on Barnes amendments pending.
So you're saying you think that the legislature would still have the authority to accommodate?
Yeah, we just amend 4603410 later.
It just keeps it out of the general fund, is the effect of the amendment.
Keeps it out of the dedicated fund.
Keeps it out of the dedicated fund, yes.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I should apologize. It is my fault, and I said it was the HFL advised activity. In order to establish with you that there was no scam, I wanted you to know that the administration believes there are other problems out in the world that we don't know the extent to which the state may be asked to address them. And I don't think if you think that you're going to lock yourself in, you really want to, well, you said you wanted to be locked in. But I just wanted to say that there are other problems out there that we know that are existing and that you're going to be called upon to address in the future. And I don't want to quibble about this particular amendment. Whatever you need to feel comfortable with it, I just think that in order of fairness and in order for you to know there's not any scam, there's nobody trying to blow on by you, we wanted to let you know that there are problems out there beyond whatever this $4.5 million in underground storage tank is. At some point, it's going to come before you.
I'm just going to announce that it was our intent to have this on a supplemental calendar today. I'm just guessing that we're not quite ready to have it on a supplemental calendar. So
we're ready for the question.
I'm going to
let's vote. Let's vote.
Come on.
All right.
We went this far. Serve a vote.
All right. Is there further discussion on this amendment?
No, just the amendment.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Kopanen.
No.
Representative Larson.
Yes.
Representative Phillips.
Yes.
Representative Sharp.
Yes.
Representative Ballmer. No. Representative Boyer.
Yes.
Representative Barnes.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Jacko.
No.
Representative DeVar.
Maybe.
Do you value your life?
I'll say yes.
Representative McKay.
No.
6 day. 5 day.
Are there further amendments on the Constitution? Representative Kopanen.
Yes, on page 2, line 3, delete the words, the mode of, and from which the revenue was collected. So the sentence would read, the maintenance and operation of a state or local governmental facility that relates to transportation and with regard to revenue, etc. The intent is to leave to the legislature the decision about the way in which the mix of transportation would be taken care of. But because, for example, it's been long suggested that there be a hydroplane ferry from Kinnick over to Anchorage, which would shorten the Matsu routing. That has proved uneconomic in any projections to run from tolls. However, it would certainly help the development and the access from the valley, and would open up the road. If that were to be proposed, we would have no method of funding it except out of general fund, unless you allowed the legislature the discretion to add to the operational cost of that ferry from the general gasoline tax. And I think most of the commuters in the Matsu area would be quite happy to have that. In other words, we cannot forecast all of the changes in transportation that come with changing technologies, and therefore I think focusing for the general problem of transportation it would be the way to do this.
Could you restate the amendment?
The amendment is on line 3 of page 2. Delete the mode of and after transportation from which the revenue was collected.
Thanks.
Okay.
And
it wasn't to delete the mode of, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
In New York.
No, it just relates to transportation.
In which the revenue is correct.
Is that fairly cool for me? Mr. Chairman, I think I'll object to it.
There is objection.
They have those.
Mr. Chairman, I think that Representative Phillips has an accurate view of this. The idea here is to give the public the assurance that if they're going to pay additional taxes, it's going to be spent on their transportation concerns. And it is certainly our intent, it's our understanding from certainly the governor's conversations about this as recent as today, is that people are going to understand. You all are facing an election year. We all understand what the situation is. If you're going to pass a tax, they want to know it's going to be spent on the purposes for which they intended, and that's exactly why the dedicated fund is set up, is so that they know where the taxes are going. This particular language says that if you're going to collect money for a specific purpose, that they want it spent on that specific purpose or a related purpose. And that...
Well, that's a related purpose. If you say just the mode of transportation, you're going to have people arguing that that money can only be spent, as in the state of Washington,
right,
which has that can only be spent for highways, period.
Mr. Chairman, it cannot
be spent for the ferry system or any of the other things.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kopanen, I think that the term relates to the mode of transportation from which the revenue was collected, gives you the flexibility to address the issue.
I don't believe it.
It is not going to allow you to collect. It is not going to allow you to collect gasoline tax and pump it in to ferry systems. That is correct.
Nor do the people intend. That particular ferry run, which would probably have to be a hovercraft, is not going to be part of your system, unless you're out of your mind, and it's going to have to be part of the highway system. Also, public transportation serves the purpose of taking automobiles off the road to make the roads more useful. Yet there would be arguments for any light rail or bus service, which would help the motorist because it would take off excess capacity off the highways, precisely because it's part of the thing. So I think that you and we need the flexibility, nor can we forecast the changes in technology. You know, if you put this sort of thing in the 1890s, we'd still be riding horse and buggies because it wouldn't have allowed for expenditure of money at all.
Let's vote. Secretary Colorado.
Take that out.
Representative Sharp.
No.
Representative Ballmer.
No.
Representative Boyer.
No.
Representative Barnes.
I know where you're
going. Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Jackson.
Yes.
Right.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Yes.
Representative Navarre.
No.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Phillips.
No.
This is the way you get into the kids' bond.
Representative Kopanen. Yes, on line 20, I'd like to change the number 3/4 to 2/3 to allow the legislature a little bit more flexibility about the other public purposes of the fund. 2/3 is sufficient protection, I believe. 3/4 is the number needed for veto override, and the veto itself would still govern.
Yeah.
I think that's.
Let's see.
I'd like to agree with Representative Kopanen, but I think when we talk about money, a 3/4 requirement is necessary.
Yes.
Representative
Phillips.
Well,
there are many in the Constitution.
I think, you know, we can make an argument of 6 of 1 and half a dozen of other on this thing. I made an inquiry about this because of future abuse by department spending willy-nilly, you know, for anything that they want to spend it on. That's why we got this provision in there to have that protection. I guess, I don't know, who do you trust most? Legislature or DOT?
Question.
One last discussion. The way we crafted the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund requires a 3/4 vote to override, but it also requires us to use all other funds before we use it. You could hardly reach this fund before getting to the Constitutional Budget Reserve if you require a 3/4 vote on that, too. This has to be reachable before you ever get it and dip into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund.
That's right.
And argue.
Question.
Otherwise, they'll end up doing the budget reserve one before this.
Right. Further discussion. Representative Barnes?
Mr. Chairman, I would like Terry Bannister and Jack Chenoweth to come to the table, please.
On this question?
On this resolution and this bill.
Yeah, but we have
can we
amendment
dispose
by,
of this?
Yeah, I know.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Sharp?
No.
Representative Baldwin?
Yes.
Representative Boyer?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Jackal?
Yes.
Representative Kopinen?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Navarre?
No.
Representative McLean?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Was it 6-5?
7-4.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Sharp.
I move that we delete lines 19 and 20.
Mm-mm. Object.
Motion is to delete lines 19 and 20. Is there a discussion?
Question. We will use it for anything but the dedication.
I know, but the problem is these guys will spend the money where they want in the future. Sure they can.
No, you appropriate.
We appropriate.
Well, yeah.
Is there any public purpose?
Representative,
I want to help.
Is there further discussion? There. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Ballmer?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Kopinen?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Sharp?
Yes, you just lost me on that resolution.
Representative McClay?
No.
Representative Navarre?
No.
2-9-9.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative McClain.
Yes, I would like to make a motion to delete lines 13, 14, and 15.
Object.
On page 2.
There is objection. Your discussion. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Kopinen.
No.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Phillips.
No.
Representative Sharp.
Nope.
Representative Ballmer.
Nope.
Representative Boyer.
No.
Representative Barnes.
No.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Jacko.
Just say no.
Just yes. It'll be my motto on this resolution. Just say no.
Representative Navarre.
No.
Representative McClain.
Yes.
2-9-9.
Further amendments to the
constitutional amendment?
On the floor, so we can vote it back. That's what they want. Now, the dedicated fund can be raided by 2/3 or more.
Yeah, but
any public
Hell no.
That's
what
I'll come back now, yeah, but I'm going to vote for a second.
Before we did, I just had a question that I wanted clarified for the committee by two people who drafted these two bills.
One more. Move that in line 1, page 2, we delete the word only.
Is there discussion?
I didn't hear him. What did he say, Mr. Chairman?
Delete only, page 2, line 1.
Page 2, line 1.
The drafts are here.
Yes, both Terry Bannister and Jack Chenoweth are here.
Jack, Terry, could we front and center?
Yeah, shouldn't that
borrow your expertise?
Right.
The amendment is on page 2.
My question to them is not on the amendment right now, it's on something else.
Okay, can we deal with this amendment first? And
which one?
The amendment that Representative Kopinen made, and then we'll
get here.
Oh, I'm
sorry.
The amendment is on page 2, line 1, to delete only. And I guess I'd like to know whether the effect of that would still be that you can only use it for these purposes unless you get a 2/3 vote, whether only has to be in there or not.
You're asking about, we're looking at the B version, page 2, line 1.
Right.
Whether or not
the only needs to be in there to restrict the, I would say that at this point it needs to be in there to restrict it.
Okay. Question. Thank you. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Boyer.
No.
Representative Barnes.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Jacob.
No.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Phillips.
No.
Representative Sharp.
No.
Representative Ulmer.
Nope.
Representative Navarre.
No.
Representative McLean.
Yes.
3 yea, 8 nay.
Motion fails. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in the beginning of the committee meeting, we discussed, or you discussed for us, and I ask you to clarify it, the effect of one of these bills passing and the other one not.
Right.
I had some discussion with Mr. Ayers, and he felt that the way that you had portrayed it to me was not that you were doing it intentionally, but that it was mischaracterized in the effect of if, and this is to the drafters, if HB 75 passed both bodies of the legislature and was signed into law, and HJR 19 did not pass the legislature and be put on the ballot